In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Okay, it's another edition of the Chicago Way with John Cass and Jeff Carlin. And with us today, once again, Kristen McCleary from the Tribune Editorial Board. Good day to you.
Hello, I promise to behave this time.
Oh, you'd behave all the time. You behave well. But you know who's not behaving well? The mayor of Chicago. He's now, a few days ago, he joined the Mike Madigan White Walkers saying that, siding with Madigan over Rauner, over the governor. Rauner made him money, I think $16 million, and basically elected him.
That's chump change.
He gave him money so he could be a mayor, right?
Yeah.
And now he's biting his hand. And then Ron brought in the wife, right? In their argument, in the fight between Madigan and Rauner over whether there is a money tree or not a money tree. I really don't think there is a money tree, but that's just me. Ron said, what did he say? He said something like, even his wife is suing him. Right?
Correct, yes. Diana Rauner, through her role as, I don't know what her title is, executive director, president of the Ounce of Prevention Fund, which is an early childhood education group, and she is part of a group of social service providers that are suing the state for breach of contract because they haven't gotten paid. And Rahm threw that kind of into
even
a press
wife.
Conference.
Even so
his wife is
so
suing
So it's okay
him.
To bring up family. Right, Jeff Carlin? I guess Rahm makes it okay.
He threw the first dagger.
To bring your family into it. And then the other day on Chicago Tonight, he's ratcheting up his fealty. He's now crawling on his knees before Mike Madigan to kiss the White Walker's hand and basically continues this fight by saying, invoking Herman Melville, correct?
Is Herman Melville's maybe Moby Dick? Because Captain Ahab, in his obsession to get Moby Dick, takes the Pequod over, and it doesn't really end well. And there's an analogy there for them.
Call him Rahm or call him Ishmael.
Now he's saying that Mike Madigan is Bruce Rauner's Moby Dick?
Yeah, he's okay. In that clip, he's suggesting on Chicago Tonight that Rauner do some summer reading in Melville's Moby Dick, and that his obsession is driving this city, or rather this state, crazy and into a toilet.
Right, because it's been all Bruce Rauner's fault for all 15 months that he's been in office, not the democratically controlled legislature for the 12 years previous.
I thought it was 87. Cullerton and Madigan have been in control for 87 years.
They've been down there 87,
oh, 87
years. Cullerton likes to make the distinction, and it's a good one. He has only been Senate president since 2007.
Since Jimmy DeLeo made him.
But he's been down there.
Since Jimmy DeLeo called everybody and said, vote for Cullerton. Let's be on it. Let's be
Jimmy
real
DeLeo
about this.
Jimmy DeLeo, D. What do you call him?
D. How you
what,
doing?
How you doing?
But he's now a lobbyist, and I hear Jimmy's doing quite well in the
yes.
lobbying department.
Yes. I just think it's fascinating when all the Chicago politicians, Forrest Claypool, Rahm Emanuel, Alderman Pawar really went after Rauner recently. They're so mad about everything that's going on in Springfield. Your party controls Springfield and has. So if there's a problem with Springfield, it's a problem with the Democrats primarily.
Before we go to the main question of the day, which I just thought up because I have a column to write and I'll use it, so I need to pick your brains. Rahm brought up Rauner's wife. Oh, even his wife is suing him and wouldn't apologize for it. Now let's hear what happens in an innocuous exchange between him and Paris
Schutz. Paris Schutz of
Chicago Tonight,
WTTW.
Who's interviewing him on that program. Listen.
Mayor, we got to go. I'm so sorry we're out of time. Thank you very much for being here.
About what leadership
and you got to get to a soccer game with your daughter and, from what I understand, your daughter's boyfriend.
Daughter's friend. Okay?
Oh, daughter's friend.
Okay,
sorry.
Paris, that would be that is now the last interview.
That was off the record.
No, that's the last interview we do. Thanks, Paris.
Oh, God. Okay, right. Phil, back to you to wrap things up.
Speaking of Moby Dick, what the heck were you doing, Rahm? Rahm, what is that?
He was kidding, right?
This no,
was
he's not.
You don't think he's...
In other words, I can bring up, you can make me $16 million from the pocket change with lint on it in your pocket and help me become mayor. and then I'll turn on you and use your wife to beat you up with. But if you make, well, someone else makes an innocuous comment about your daughter's going to a soccer game, I'll never do another interview with you in my life.
See, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt with this one, because, and I haven't watched it, but I think he was more joking than he was a few months ago when he had a breakfast interview with Politico. And backstage,
Natasha, right?
Natasha Karecki, former Sun-Times mm-hmm. reporter, now with Politico, was one of the reporters there. But it was with the, I want to say Mike Allen. I'm sorry if I'm
yes,
getting
Mike
that
Allen.
Name wrong.
Mike
okay.
Allen. Yeah.
So they had been just like kicking it backstage, and Rahm mentioned that he and his family were going to Cuba. So his opening question when they were seated before this audience, you know, total softball, just making small talk. I understand you're taking your family to Cuba. You know, tell us about that decision. And Rahm was angry. I mean, that time it was clear. He said, I can't believe you just said that publicly. You know, I try to have private time with my family. I'm giving my wife your cell phone number. She's going to be so angry. So I think that was a little different than the exchange with Paris. No?
No.
No. Okay.
Because if you bring somebody's wife into that made you and then turn around and go with the White Walker and kiss the White Walker hand and all the rest that he's doing, it's amazing. And then if you mention your daughter's going to a soccer game with her boyfriend, and then you have to be a hard ass again? Come on.
Yeah.
I don't think that's consistent. What did they say? Consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, or something like stupid consistency. But with Rahm, it's always stupid consistency. You bring up his family, he's gonna go after you. But he can bring up your family.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, Rahm?
Yeah, he actually did apologize, didn't he, backtrack on the Diana Rahner issue and said, I should have just referenced the first lady instead of...
He didn't say, I'm sorry. You know what an apology is? I'm sorry. It's not whether you were offended or not. I'm sorry I said something that was offended.
Yes.
Something that Donald Trump will never say about the judge, the federal
right.
judge. But to extend this whole Rahm Rauner Madigan thing, question for both of you. We mentioned it on the podcast last time, I think. My argument is Rauner has only been there, as you said, for 18 months. But it seems like he's losing the narrative of the news, that everything is Rauner is anti-union and Madigan is pro-middle class. I think the news business has bought not the editorial, clearly not the Chicago Tribune editorial board, and clearly not a columnist who refers to Madigan as the White Walker, but maybe others. And what is that about? Am I wrong? Am I right?
I think you are right. Part of it is Rauner's fault, because he came in and immediately started talking about right to work. This would have been January 2015, right after he was sworn in, kept referring to the state's employee union, AFSCME, as AFSCAMI. You know, so he kind of brought on some of this himself, but he's losing the war now because people, I hear people just repeating Democratic talking points. I was on a panel recently where they said, well, what about Rauner's harsh treatment of the unions? Why should the Democrats go along with that? And I said, it's not harsh. I mean, if you actually look at what he's trying to do, it's just kind of nibbling around the edges. He's not trying to take away collective bargaining over health care and wages. And initially he was leaning in that direction, but for a year now, basically, that's been off the table. But you can't, these are like in the weeds kinds of discussions. And so just the anti-union rhetoric sticks, the middle class rhetoric sticks, when in fact, I think the Democrats have harmed the middle class in the state more than anybody possibly could, because they have burdened us with so much debt. But it's a tough message to get across, and I do think Rauner is losing that battle.
One thing he may have done is separate his argument with the private trades and the government trades.
Exactly.
What he started out, he let Steve Brown and Mike Madigan put this narrative together where he is anti-union. What he's really doing is he's opposed to AFSCME, the government unions, not cops and firefighters or public safety, but the other government paid unions are not the guys who frame a house, who put the concrete down to build a house. He's not at war with them. But you get a sense that he is from this,
yes.
that he didn't separate. Why?
I honestly, I don't know if he... if he understood that. There were a lot of things when he came into office that I think he surrounded himself with people from Mark Kirk, U.S. Senator Mark Kirk's office, and who didn't really understand state government. And that's a delineation that I even think the unions make. Trade unions, very different than public employee unions in what they demand and what they get. And the proof is Rauner has actually settled contract disputes with like 18 other unions that work with state government. It's just the AFSCME big contract that he's mm-hmm. still unable to work out. So he has done a poor job job of doing that, too.
What about his PR sense, Jeff Carlin? When you've seen him on radio, have you had him on the, and again, Jeff is the executive producer of the Rokon Show with Anna DeVolantis every day, weekdays from 3 to 7 o'clock on WGN.
Ding.
Ding. But when you do that, when, you, when you've had him on, have you gotten the sense that he's able to make the cogent argument?
He does. I mean, I think if you're actively listening to what he's saying, he makes the argument, and he does present himself as this person who's just trying to fix what's wrong, not necessarily take anything away or break anyone's back or any of that nature. But the machine is so, and the deck essentially is so stacked against him. I have many friends who work as therapists or who work for, you know, people with disabilities or social workers, and in that realm, and they hate him. They think he's the worst thing in the world because they're struggling to get by because they don't know if their paychecks are going to come in, or they don't know if their money's going to come in for them. And they blame him. They blame him directly. They don't blame anybody else in the General Assembly. They think it's Rauner who's not playing fair, Rauner who's holding up their checks.
Rauner's not giving them the money from the money trees.
Exactly.
That grow in Springfield and Chicago, right?
Right. And these are viable and useful resources. People who, you know, they depend on this to help them, but they're not getting paid because there's no budget, and they only see Rauner as the bad guy. And I think that comes from the top down, because the people who are running their businesses and their entities, you know, they're dealing with people in state government, and they say, well, they're telling me that the governor's not signing a budget, so we can't, you know, we can't pay you. We don't have money to pay you.
Kristen, what do you think of that?
I agree. I mean, it's very, and part of that is comes with the job. I mean, he is the governor. He promised to shake up Springfield, turn the state around, and we're in this, you know, 2 years now with heading toward not having a budget, the third year of not having a balanced budget. And, you know, he is the executive, so I get it that he has to wear the jacket. But if you watch this stuff up close and you see that, you know, the attempts that he has made to come to some sort of a compromise. I mean, I don't think even your friends, Jeff, want to send a blank check to Springfield again. I think people do want reform. They want term limits. They want redistricting reform. They don't want to keep shoveling money to Springfield when Springfield has proven it doesn't know how to, you know, operate correctly. We're a terribly mismanaged state.
As the editorial in the Tribune this week, if you look for it, it's called it's the exchange with Barbara Flynn Curry. In Game of Thrones terms, she would be one of the red sorceresses for the White Walker.
I have to start watching this show.
And who was the other guy, the businessman?
Dwight Kay. He's
right?
From Metro East St. Louis. And this happened, it's on our website. In the hours before they passed the House, the $7 billion out-of-balance budget, right. Dwight Kay stands up and starts asking questions about specific line items in the budget. Well, what's this money for? Well, what's this money for? And it just gives you some insight. It's one of those lift-the-curtain type moments.
$800,000 for sheep breeding research.
Yes.
Or
and you have Barbara Flynn Curry, yeah. Mike Madigan's mm-hmm. top lieutenant in the House, trying to defend this kind of spending, and it's quite remarkable.
So I think that Rauner, now he's got Chip Englander back with him, who went to try to elect my candidate for president, Rand Paul.
Was it Rand Paul? Yes,
yeah.
You're right. I was thinking
Chip
it was Kasich, but you're right.
I saw Chip in Iowa when we were there for
yeah.
the primary.
And now he's got some numbers that I guess show that that outside of Chicago, Madigan is held in worse regard than Rauner, but I don't know.
I mean, I certainly hear that. I Rauner is much more popular outside of Chicago, but I still think in a lot of these towns where you have a heavy union population, you have prisons where that's
the
main
job.
Employer, it's the only job. People are worried, you know, and they are kind of losing faith in both sides at this point. And Madigan has always been, I mean, he is hated outside of Chicago for sure.
Here's the problem. If you want to talk to the governor, generally you can get to him, or you can, or he will make himself available. Not every day, but he holds news conferences.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk to Madigan? You don't. Madigan doesn't talk. Rarely, and if he does, mostly reporters accept that a private contractor named Steve Brown will do the talking for him.
Yeah.
Since when do you say, I don't want to talk? No, I don't want to talk to the mayor. I'd rather talk to the spokesman. When do the reporters start saying, no, we're going to talk to Madigan? We don't care about what you say, Mr. Spinner. Why do they give in to that?
He's Madigan, over since Rauner has been elected, has made himself more available. There, he did go through long stretches where he would just say, if you tried to approach him, and I was down there sometimes doing this, like chasing him with a microphone, I just really don't think it benefits me to talk to the press because, you know, he gets beat up a lot.
Yeah, you can argue. Right?
but he does now, like, he will emerge from a meeting with Rauner and have some remarks and take some questions. The issue to me is more that he just gets away with saying things that aren't true, both sides.
Like,
you know?
Okay, but let's focus on Matt. What is Matt? Yeah. I'm for the middle class. I'm the middle class guy.
Yes.
Really? Yes. If you define middle class as working in a union job for government, yeah.
Right. Which is not
like everybody
actually
in your district.
Yes.
Right?
Which there's an argument to be made that those workers, when you compare benefits and pay, aren't actually part of the middle class anymore. They have moved on. They are comfortable and doing better than the people who are scraping together and working two and three jobs. That, to me, is the middle class. And if,
thanks,
you know,
Obama. Yeah, but that's where we are, right? That's where we are.
Right. I mean, you're responsible for your own retirement account. You're responsible for, you know, showing up to work and not having a contract that protects you if you keep showing up late or.
Kind of sounds like Tribune people.
Kronk.
So, yes.
Oh, okay.
What's
you
Tribune?
Had to bring it up.
Tribune does not compute.
Okay.
It's Tronk.
All right. Tronk. People bring up Tronk to me on social media, like, what do you have to say? I'm not going to respond. The dragon does not hunt flies.
Yes.
Right, correct.
Gosh, I need to be reminded of that,
I'm not
though.
Going to swoop down to engage with some idiot. You don't want to make beer can chicken, dude? Don't make it, okay? But I think it's therapeutic to stick a can up a chicken's butt and roast it.
Naturally.
And it tastes really good. To me.
Sure.
If you don't like
it. I tried it, John. On your behalf, I tried it.
You tried it at my house.
It was delicious.
Was it delicious?
Succulent and delicious.
Yeah, so that's my, I go by the Jeff Carlin rule. And then now the Tronk thing. So people do the Tronk. Oh, Cass, what are you going to say about Tronk? I got nothing to say. I have nothing to say.
And for those who aren't familiar.
Oh, yeah. Tell everybody.
The rebranding of Tribune Publishing is now Tronk, which is an acronym for, and it escapes me, but
Tribune Online Content.
There you go.
Which is our future.
Yes. And I think to smooth this whole thing over, they should put together Keep Calm and Tronk On t-shirts and give them to everybody who works for Tribune Publishing. Well, Tronk.
Yeah.
I was thinking of like Make Tronk Great Again caps, sort of like. No.
Nice.
That's okay. Also good.
Yeah, good.
I actually put a on the whiteboard in the WGN radio kitchen, so I drew up a little, you know, Keep Calm and Tronk On for everybody.
Hey, listen, you little former Tribsters. Watch it. I'm coming through the glass.
That's right. Jeff isn't part of Tronk.
You're not part of us anymore.
So you can make fun
you
of us.
You guys then. Basically gave us the debt, took all the good stuff, kicked us out, and now you're like rolling in your little, you know, world of your whatever you guys are called. What do you call it? Tribune Entertainment?
Tribune Media.
Tribune Media,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The profitable part.
And
right.
And they gave us all the debt and kicked the, and said, see ya.
Yeah.
Take all the bad stuff.
Right.
Thanks a lot, mister.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Madigan.
I'm sure we'll be Tromba soon or something of that nature.
Okay, so what else happened to you this week, Jeff Carlin?
Cool.
Besides the fact that you were cooking something in a pan while you were camping, it looked like you were cooking mushrooms.
No, I was...
Like you went to, like Carlos...
Shrooms or mushrooms?
Shrooms. It looked like you went to Carlos Castaneda camp. I'm like, what are you doing, tripping here? What is that?
No, I went camping this past weekend.
Yeah. With the mushroom hunters?
No mushroom hunters. It took a Monday off and a prolonged weekend camping outside of Milwaukee, about 30 miles north on the lake. My favorite part about camping is cooking over open flame. Got some charcoal, set a fire, and then we cooked breakfast and lunch. Actually,
what were you cooking? It looked like mushrooms in a pan.
No, it was bagels and like eggs and potatoes mixed together.
Yep.
Am I right?
Yep.
And maybe some bacon. It looked delicious.
Yes, it was. It was.
What were those round white things?
Those were bagels.
Bagels.
Why do you fry bagels?
Well, you warm them. You toast them. You have no other way to toast them. You throw them in a pan.
I think John Cass needs to go camping. Have you ever been camping?
I like to go camping, but. My ideal life would be living in the wilderness by myself, okay?
Oh, my gosh. You would last, like...
No.
48 hours?
I'm a hunter. I would take Zeus with me. Thought he would come up and visit me every 6 months.
You had this long beard.
I'd have a long beard and everything. Yeah.
I'll prep it
because if Hillary gets elected, I'll have to go somewhere.
We'll airdrop beer cans and chicken for you.
Thank you. The problem with camping with my wife is that she won't use a porta potty. She will walk 6 miles in the sun or rain and not use a porta potty. Number one. Number two, the showering. Okay? She demands a shower. And number three, the sand in your clothing. Mm-hmm. She doesn't like that.
Well, that was the beauty of the place we were.
She's Sicilian. What can I say?
They had beautiful facilities that you could, like, 2 minutes walk from your campsite. And they also have hike-in sites where you could go and you're, like, 15, 20 minutes out. But, of course, Christine, she was the same way. She would not want to do that. So it was beautiful. Harrington Beach, Wisconsin. Highly recommended.
Did you bring some cheese back for Kristen?
I did not.
I prefer the cheese curds for the future. From Mars Cheese Castle, if you're stopping.
Just the squeaky cheese or the fried cheese curds?
Squeaky.
Yeah, squeaky's the way to go.
Squeaky cheese.
Yes. We did that.
Gross.
I did realize, though, on my way up there, that Wisconsin, for all its foibles and inbreeding.
It's got a supper club.
No,
did you just say inbreeding?
I might have. That's a dad. That's
Arkansas.
No, it's Wisconsin, if you ask my dad. But
because the Holsteins are with the other black and white.
My dad tells a joke about Wisconsin, and I apologize for this in advance, but Wisconsin, where men are men and sheep are scared. So that's the joke.
What a hater.
I know. But
I love you, Mr. Carlin, but still.
But I did realize and come to the realization that the campground was a state campground run by the state, beautifully kept, beautiful facilities. The highways were great. There's no tolls anywhere. We went to Milwaukee, clean, lots of amenities everywhere. They're, quote, Divvy bikes, which are bubbler. And I realized Wisconsin, they're kicking our ass in everything. Our football team's better than ours. Our baseball team's better than theirs. But they're way better off than we are. And I was just reading that Wisconsin is likely to go red this fall.
Mm-hmm. I saw that, too.
Which is amazing. And if people in Illinois could wake up and see that, hey, there's people like around her, people like Governor of Wisconsin, that's not a bad thing. This is where we could be if we all just realized.
Don't make me sad. Zero pension debt in Wisconsin. They make all of their pension payments. They pay all of their bills on time. You provide a service in Wisconsin, you get paid within 30 days here, maybe never. It does make a difference. Mm-hmm. And we're struggling to keep our campgrounds
open.
And they
have cheese.
Yeah, our campgrounds are... Yeah.
And they have awesome
cheese.
Thank
you, John Katz, for your contribution.
Exactly.
Cheese, walleye, right?
Salmon. Mm-hmm.
Perch fry, and all the VFW calls.
Absolutely.
You know? I've got one. Yeah. I've got one for you, and you know about it. I don't even know if it still exists, but for Kristen with the kids, okay, because it just came to me. Where do you go? Okay, how about the Bristol Renaissance Fair?
Yeah.
Have you ever been to that?
No, I'm not real into that, but go ahead and try to sell me on it.
Okay, number one, the Bristol Renaissance Fair has swords. You have a boy and a girl, okay? So there's sword play.
Mm-hmm.
There's Elizabethan town. You have people dressed up, like, period specific. And then sometimes you get, like, a weird tourist that's wearing, like, some Viking or, like, Oakland Raiders Viking mix thing, you know? Everyone carries swords. They have to be tied down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they have this these frozen peaches, which are awesome.
Ooh, meat. I was just going to ask you about the food.
Meat. They have turkey. Turkey legs. Mm-hmm. And it's just nice, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I went a couple times when I was in high school. Yeah, and I actually went to one.
Is that when you with the mushrooms and the
yes,
around?
Exactly. Yeah, that was okay, it. I actually went to a Renaissance fair.
Shrooms.
Yeah, shrooms.
And you don't cook them,
right?
According to Jeff. Not that he would know.
From what I'm told.
From my experience.
They retire. I'm going back to the 70s. Okay, go on.
In your way back machine.
Yeah.
I went to a Renaissance fair at a castle in Germany, and it was even crazier. I mean, everybody was. It was like you walk through the gate, and it was just you're transported back to ye old.
So you're like you want the last turkey, like another guy grabs it, and he says, "No, that's mine." You say, "No, I need it," and he says, "I bear Mason chain this day." Right?
Exactly.
Something like that.
Exactly.
You have a combat.
Yeah, and then it was
like the Society for Anachronisms, whatever. It's
right.
That kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, you would love that. Why don't you like that, Kristen? I just offered one.
I know. I never really experienced that in high school, and I don't know.
What, you didn't take literature in high school?
No, I mean the
Moby Dick.
You know,
Mayor,
like the
Mayor Rahm.
The Madrigal singers when they would get
dressed up.
And what's the place out by Hoffman Estates where you can eat with your hands?
Medieval Times.
Yes.
I have to say,
I'm not a fan of that either.
When the boys were little, we took them there. and they loved it, you know, because they thought it was real.
Yeah, that's true.
And the knight, one knight starts walking, riding his horse near our table. We're right at the edge. And he says, who shall cross lances with me? And I looked at Peter and I said, this knight challenges you right now.
Oh, great.
Peter was like 6 years old. He climbs under the table and hides, crying.
Oh, man.
Pete, sorry, man.
Oh, man.
I love you. Daddy loves you, man.
He probably still remembers that.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It could be intimidating. I get it.
They got to up the food over there.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, so I haven't been there since I was about 18 or 19, but I remember the food just, it's dark, so you can't even really tell what you're eating. And I think that's the point. I went there on a date, too. It was just not a...
A date? With like a family? So now we know why Christian
doesn't
like...
There we go. You're scarred.
You were scarred by some guy who was in the fantasy and stuff back
then. Did he have long hair?
He had a mullet.
He had a mullet?
Yeah.
And
this
is the 80s. Did he read like Tolkien like and stuff like that? Like, why would I want to do math when I could read Tolkien?
No,
like
but that? At that age, you know, we had no money. Just getting enough money to like put gas in the car to get there. It was a big deal. We got dressed up, and it was just pretty disappointing.
Oh, man, I love it.
Yeah. Were you not the queen of love and beauty?
I really had to sort of fake my way through the whole performance. I did not enjoy it at all. The food was bad. I wanted to
The
leave.
Renaissance Fair is better because it's like all day. There's all sorts of different things going on at one time. I'll look it up.
I wrote it down.
The kids would
I wrote
like
it down. Bristol, right?
Right? All right. So
what, Bristol, Wolf, not
Bristol
Palin's daughter.
No, yeah,
no.
Don't go to her fair.
They have a different kind of fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically knuckle sandwiches that they eat.
Yeah.
All right. So, Kristen McQuarrie, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, John. See you soon.
See you soon. Bye. And thanks for the column tips. And so when I write this, I'm not going to give you a byline, but I want to tell everybody that you helped. Okay?
That's fine. All right. I'm your leg woman.
Oh, no.
Okay. All right. See you. Got a couple pouches instead of pockets. It's just kind of pleasant. Dressing like a peasant. This is fucking awesome. I'm going to the past. Got a couple pouches instead of pockets. It's just kind of pleasant. Dressing like a peasant. This is awesome.
What you know about rocking a slick wolf t-shirt? What you talking about doing more Renaissance research? Put my foxtail on my kilt for the hell of it. You don't get to tell me that my outfit isn't
Thank
relevant.
You very great granddad for making plaid skirts, son. Cause right now I'm about to go and buy one. I'm at Ren Faire. You can find me with a
I'm not
kidding. These are real live.
The queen and the knights and the fairies and tights, they all think that I'm looking pretty nice because of floss in this mother sucker. I hit the mud pit and I toss in a mother trucker. Jump from the power.
Joining us now on another edition of the Chicago Way is our good friend Pat Brady, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, and now a consultant and political maester with the, what's the company?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
Next Generation Strategies. Okay, so if I were a client, all right, and my name is Bruce Rauner, and I come to you and I say, Pat Brady, John Cass is on the podcast at Chicago Way and in his column saying, yeah, I know John, you know, he introduced me to the people of Illinois, he supported my candidacy, but now he's saying that I'm losing the narrative in the news to Mike Madigan. Not the what's right and wrong, but just the way the messaging is. It looks like Madigan is winning. It seems that Rauner's the anti-this, he's the anti-that. He doesn't want to give anybody the money. He's, you know, oh, I need the money. He's stopping the money.
Well, a couple things to think about. Let's look at some recent public polling that has Madigan's disapproval. He has terrible poll numbers. The state now knows who he is and knows that he is the guy that's primarily responsible for a lot of the problems we have. And I think, to answer your question, recognize, you know, what he is and what he does now. So I don't necessarily agree he's losing the narrative. I actually thought at this point that the governor's poll numbers would be in the low 20s because he's doing a lot of things that a lot of people don't like. And he's some of the stuff should have been done years ago. So, and he's always said that he's about the next generation, not about the next election. And I think it's become clear to a lot of people that Mike Madigan's about the next election. I mean, you and I have known that for a long time.
Yes.
I think the public sees it. So I
there
don't
won't
necessarily
be a budget.
There won't be.
I'm
no,
just
he,
predicting.
He just yeah. said he's already. Liu Lang said that, and I work in Springfield, and that is the word on the street. There will be no budget. So I don't necessarily agree. The change is tough, and a lot of things people don't like. But I do give him credit for standing his ground because pretty much every governor that's gone down there has gotten rolled. Including the Republicans.
Yes.
Have been rolled by Madigan, and Rauner's not getting rolled by him. So let's wait and see what happens in November, and let's wait and see what happens in a couple of years. You know, another point, too, that nobody's talking about, maybe this is part of the narrative, and I deal a lot with the agencies, and it is night and day dealing with any of the agencies that are Governor Rauner as compared to Governor Quinn. It's not who sent you. It is public policy. What's a good public policy? And that's all I tell my clients is if you have a good public policy discussion, a reason for being here, you're going to be heard. If not, you're not. And that is, I can give you 20 examples of that in the last year. So I don't think he's getting credit for some of that, which is hard to explain than a budget crisis. But we just have to be patient. This is going to be hard.
Look, there's you were the chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. You've been around politics your whole life.
It's the only sport Irish guys can play.
Besides soccer.
Golf, too.
Soccer. I need you to explain for me, is it true or not, that is there really a money tree in Springfield that grows money, and it just keeps growing money, and all you have to do is pick it, and you can just have free stuff, whatever you want?
I do know this. It's can not, you just it's, tell it's, me? It's a money fairy. It's not a money tree. It comes down from above. It doesn't grow. Maybe downstate it's pretty fertile land, but I think it's a money fairy.
So it just sprinkles the money.
It sprinkles the money.
That's
what we never know who catches it. A tree would be too.
But I mean, what do people expect? There's no, the state's bankrupt.
Yeah,
there's no money.
And the state's bankrupt because, and it's gotten worse in this budget impasse, but it's bankrupt primarily because of the pensions. Remember when we had the tax increase that we're going to pay the pensions down or pay the past due bills down?
Right.
But no, it all went to pensions. That was Governor Quinn's big deal.
Right.
And listen, too, in defense of Governor Rauner, for a Republican to put any kind of tax increase on the table, it goes against everything.
Well, can you explain that?
Yeah,
he has said,
I will raise taxes, but it's not going to be just income tax. It's going to be a broad-based thing that hits everybody, which is fair, which we need. Everybody agrees we need a tax increase, and he's put that on the table. Jim Edgar did it in the 90s when he was running against Hardigan, but that's pretty courageous for a Republican, understanding that. But
he wants something in return, and what he wants is his turnaround agenda.
Not even, he's gone from 44, 45 items he ran on down to two or three now, and things like term limits, work comp reform that everybody agrees we need. Even some of the union things that he was talking about, giving local control to the locals to how they do their contracts, he's kind of watered down. So he's really been met more than halfway, and the speaker doesn't want to do anything. There's two bills right now that could pass that get education funding, clean bills, and a stopgap budget bill that he won't do anything with.
Now,
they want the crisis.
He wants the crisis because he wants to whip up the public unions to get everyone to come out and vote for Hillary and his people in November.
Yeah,
and here's my argument. My argument is that I have met them, decent Democrats in state government and, in the state legislature and the Senate.
Oh, the Democrats in the state legislature, there's some great people.
Great people.
Great
but
people.
Here's my argument. If you vote for one, you're not voting for that person. You're voting for Mike Madigan. If you're in the suburbs and you vote for a Democrat for state legislature, you're not voting for that person, no matter how good they are, no matter how independent they are, no matter what they said, I'm not with Madigan on this, or whatever he let you, let you run off the leash on. You're voting for Mike Madigan to be the boss. It's that simple,
yep.
Right?
I've been saying that for six years, and yeah, I'm not sure if people just don't get how it actually works, and maybe they don't. But I agree. But there's some of the Democrats down there in the House, tremendous people, tremendous public servants.
Yeah, but it's not, they don't control things.
Yeah, and it's
that's
way in the
problem.
Weeds. And I think Kristen might have written on this, on the process down there, that Madigan controls it from beginning to end. What bills live and die, what committees, what committee members, when it gets called. Even in the last budget drop, I was down there when they dropped the budget, the one that's, $7 billion out of balance.
Right.
It was dropped. It came from the budget fairy. I mean, no one had seen it.
I think her name's Barbara Flynn Curry.
Curry just dropped.
With her little gossamer wings flying above. Right.
She dropped it.
Right.
But that's how
and
it works.
It's 800 pages, vote for it in a minute and a half.
Yeah, it was like
8:30
at night.
30 minutes, yeah, vote for it. It's like the Sox stadium thing of years ago. Okay, so you think that Rauner is doing better than you expected, but what about the way the media is? I'm going to accept some people from that. The Tribune editorial board and a certain columnist who compares Mike Madigan to White Walker, okay? But outside of that, I get a sense that Madigan's narrative has been bought. Not that they want to play favorites or that they're pro-Madigan. I don't buy that. But I think that they see this as a two equal partners fighting it out, when in reality, it's not a personality fight. It's we don't have any damn money.
Right. Again, for me, Stand your ground, Governor Rauner. You're the only person that's actually done it in my lifetime, and people need to stay with him because what he's doing is the right thing. And I genuinely believe he cares about the state, and I just don't believe that the Speaker thinks anything other than the next election. So we just got, you know, it's hard to do. This is you know, historically.
Sheldon Silver. I don't know why he said that.
Go back to Reagan's first term. At this point, his first term, his poll numbers were terrible. They were talking he wasn't going to run in 84.
Right. And then it was let Reagan be Reagan.
Then remember the economy, things turn around. I mean, it's not going to happen here like that, but we got to stay the course.
I got to ask you a political question because I'd rather talk to you about Game of Thrones and stuff like that. But I got to ask you another political question.
You watch
question.
Ray Donovan?
No.
Okay, got to watch that too.
I hear that's good. You're the candidate you're not going to support, the Republican candidate. What do you make of this, the whole judge is a Mexican thing?
It's racist. Absolutely stone cold racist. Nothing. You can't say that. It's just, I mean, I'm a lawyer. To me, beyond the racism, which is terrible, is he doesn't understand the concept of separation of powers. And then he's running for head of the executive branch, and he can't be saying stuff like that. Just like Barack Obama shouldn't have been yelling at the Supreme Court when he gave his State of the Union speech, or yelling at Paul Ryan in another speech.
Right.
It's not the way the system's set up. And if Trump...
Where the president insulted the Supreme Court in a State of the Union speech because they wouldn't go along with what he wanted.
Right. I think it was the campaign finance case. I'm sorry. But to me, I'm a Senator Kirk fan, and I couldn't be happier that he did what he did yesterday. Say I'm not supporting him, and I hope people follow, because I think Trump's a buffoon.
Well, I think that Senator Kirk, I'm waiting. How many more times can he disavow Trump in this campaign?
I don't think there's enough days.
I'm just saying, how many more times can he hold a news conference saying, I will not endorse Trump because of this or that?
I think, he had a pretty good day yesterday. He had front page of every paper. We're talking about it. So I think he did the right thing. But if you listen, really, truly listen to Trump, he's not a Republican. He's not a Republican on trade. He's not a Republican on health care. He's not a Republican on national.
He's a Democrat, a big government Democrat. But the reason why he's compelling is because the Republican, unlike you and people in Illinois, the National Republican Party lost its way a long time ago.
I agree.
Right?
I agree.
But my question is, okay, I'll give you the racism part, right? How dare you? How dare you criticize a judge for his ethnicity? So criticize is the wrong thing, right? And ethnicity is you can't do it, okay? So that's wrong. Is it racist, then, to say, we need judges who are black or Latino or based on their gender, or I need a ginger judge with a beard, because like Jeff Carlin, because maybe they'll support help the ginger, the redheaded people.
We need it.
I thought you were talking about my date to the wedding.
You know what I'm saying?
No, because
so isn't that the identity politics of the left, which use that? They don't talk about diversity of mind or thinking. They talk about diversity of skin color that will prejudge your thinking. So
That's where I disagree. Trump is saying because he is Hispanic, he is incapable. He has an inherent conflict of interest in his brain against Donald Trump, and he's out to get him. Therefore, he's basically violating his oath that he took when he was sworn in.
I'm not defending Trump.
Let me finish. This is my second point. Yeah. Your point, and I agree that. The identity politics I wish we could get over. But I've spent a lot of times in courtrooms, and I do believe you need a diversity of experiences. And it can't just be all white Irish guys. And so the push by Democrats...
I would agree as a Greek guy.
Yeah, you need some... you've been down the criminal court building, and you see...
I was just there.
I mean, not for your parole hearing, but when you go down to actually cover it.
Right.
But is there anything worse than seeing a bunch of African-Americans or Hispanics in court and a bunch of white people that really don't quite understand everything? I'm not saying they could be lenient or not just apply the law, but I think that perspective is important.
I think it's true that diversity is important. I reject the notion that diversity equals skin color or ethnicity. And the Democrats have pushed this, and gender and so forth, have pushed this cookie-cutter approach to diversity to manipulate it for their political purposes.
I agree with that.
And it does nothing to support the concept. It does nothing except identity politics causes more rifts, which is why we have Trump in the first place.
Right. No.
Now, on the Mexican judge, how dare he be a Mexican, I agree, right? However, let me offer this.
Please don't defend this guy.
I'm not defending him, but I'm offering this.
No, okay.
When a judge, I've seen the idea that a federal judge is somehow a high priest of the seven in Game of Thrones, and therefore unsullied, right? It's from politics. To me, is the talk, you would never talk like that because you know how judges are made. So do I.
Yeah.
So in other words, we sell an argument to the people that
about
they're not judges. right. plural, are not political. But then they can't be. How dare you? But then they don't have any agendas. How dare? But then we know how they're made. And it's made by federal judges, made by senators, by their people, by committees, and bipartisan. And they say, well, you got a Hispanic guy the last time. We need this Irish guy.
No, Irish guys are out now. Right.
Out of favor.
Hogs get slaughtered or whatever.
No, come on. Not enough Irish Republicans. Although sometimes I think Reagan.
Scotch-Irish. McCain, Scotch-Irish.
I used to have the picture of Reagan on my wall.
I told you. I used to see him. We talked about that. I used to see him in the office all the time. But when you say the party got away from its roots, if you read his 1980 acceptance speech at Detroit at the convention, it's so far removed from what we hear now from our candidates, other than Paul Ryan.
So then how is my concern is for the state of Illinois first. I go local to national. So the issue is that there are a number of senators, state senators, who are Democrats who are in districts that Rauner absolutely killed in, and state reps that Rauner did extremely well in, who are Democrats. How is the Trump at the top of the ticket and Kirk, who I know you support, but is perceived by his own base as either not truly Republican or because he supported Durbin, for God's sake. They're not in favor of him. How does that work and play down on the lower part of the ticket, which is the most important, state reps and state senators?
You know, if the smart people that I've talked to in the Democrat side, believe it or not, say Trump, and this is a quote from a guy that's run a lot of campaigns for the speaker, that Trump on the top of the ticket downstate in those races that we have got a shot at, way down south of I-64, basically, Trump adds about 10 points to the Republicans because he'll turn on a lot of people and they're not going to vote for the Democrats. But now you get up here in the suburbs and places where Governor Rauner did very, very well. Suburban women hate him. His poll numbers, cooking the collars, are absolutely terrible.
My wife, one of them.
Yeah, I mean,
Betty just can't go.
I got a theory that there's a lot of guys that live out by where you are and where I am. And if they do anything for Trump, they just hear this thing in their head, she'll kill me if I do that. but to long answer your question, I think a lot of those racers are localized too. I'm hoping Trump gets marginalized enough that he's not relevant. And he did a good job this week getting himself there.
It's interesting in the strong Madigan districts, in the Madigan supporting wards of the southwest side, Trump does very well.
Yeah, I mean, Republican presence has always done well down there, haven't they?
But particularly Trump along Archer, you know, in Madigan's own district.
Well, he fits. That's the Democrat.
Right?
Yeah, that's his demographic. Yeah.
Right? So it should be interesting.
What do you think about the Libertarian, Gary Johnson, Bill Weld?
I'm not too excited, to tell you the truth.
He says he's going to quit smoking pot when he runs. Did you see that?
That would be good.
He said that. He goes, I need a clear head. I'm going to quit smoking pot. He said that on Fox on
Brilliant.
Sunday.
That would be good. See, obviously he doesn't want to make 10%, right, when he talks like that.
You need to get to 15.
15? That's well, he won't. And plus, look.
He's at 10 right now.
Any vote for a third candidate, whether it's Bill Kristol's fantasy and Mr. French, who's a credible man, or this Gary Johnson, is a vote for Hillary. Anybody who understands politics knows that if you split this thing, it's a vote. Yeah, I think that Trump will have difficulty winning anyway. But you never know what will happen in the next. Right now, it's a race to the bottom.
Oh, it's so bad.
And look at her.
Oh, she's terrible.
I mean,
she is so
bad.
For
all the stuff we talk, I mean.
She's the worst candidate I've ever seen. She's terrible.
What do you mean?
Retail candidate.
In terms of just coming across the voters, right?
Yeah. And then she does these call-ins. It's like get screamed at by somebody's ex-wife. It's terrible. I mean, I thought the dog got hit by a car. Something's terrible.
I told you, my pretty. Right.
I listened to this in the room next to the TV the other day. Yeah, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah. She comes off really harsh.
Parsed.
Remember, she doesn't have a news conference. She won't have a news conference. No. She won't answer questions. I mean, look, yeah, Trump, okay, he's always on. Shut up, Trump. You know, enough of you.
Right.
You know, with Sean Hannity, his little puppet.
Oh, man, it's
that guy. I mean, that guy's
bad.
Always been like that. And then on the other side, you have her. She doesn't even do, she won't do a news conference where she'll get questions from beat reporters, not from a host that wants the guest to come back on.
Right, exactly.
How wonderful are you, Hillary? Oh, you're so smart. Oh, isn't this great for
Yeah, does it hurt to be this good?
Yeah, does it hurt to be you when everyone wants to knock you down because they don't like women?
You know, too, the way she parses her words. Remember, this is the family that polled where to take a vacation. Remember that in 94 when he was in the tank right after Hillary Care? They took a poll. Dick Morris took a poll to where the Clinton should vacation.
Where did they end up?
They ended up in Colorado, White Rider Raft. And if you remember the picture of her in a white
rider raft. Oh, the helmet. Oh, my God.
I've never seen anybody more mortified.
All that stuff will come back.
Yeah.
So prediction, indicted or not indicted?
Not indicted. They won't do it. They just won't pull the trigger.
But she's clearly, you've read the statute.
Yep.
So have I. She's in violation of the statute now, based on what we know publicly.
Back in the 90s, I was at the Justice Department. I was in the fraud section, and Whitewater came through our office first. So Whoa. My buddies had it for a week, and we had discussions. I was a brand-new prosecutor there. You know, I'd been there a couple years. But point is, they said if you're going to take somebody out like that, and I don't mean this literally, if you're going to take out somebody big, you got to hit him in the head. You can't be something that's a technical violation. It's got to be something pretty big, or the jury will reject it.
And this one?
You know, to me, the bigger investigation that may be getting done, hopefully, is the link between UMA and the foundation and the way they manipulated that to their advantage. For
okay, I'll offer something, okay? Here's my theory. The Clinton Foundation, they had no money. Remember?
Yeah.
She was poor. They were broke.
Mm-hmm. They had to get a loan from Terry McAuliffe, yeah, who's now nice. In investigation, too.
So what happens? They build this thing, the Clinton Foundation. She's Secretary of State.
Exactly.
The money goes to Bill Clinton, to the Clinton Foundation, and at the same time, she's Secretary of State saying, yes, Mr. Strongman from Azerbaijan or Saudi Arabia or whatever, yeah, we'll take care of you here, and the money goes in and out. It's like a Chicago way.
Oh, it's fund. Perfect. It's
right.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And she held the emails and kept them, not because she was worried about national security, because she wanted to protect her emails on that from the Congress who might be looking at it.
And UMA, Mrs. Anthony Weiner, right?
Carlos Danger.
Carlos Danger.
Right.
Have you seen the documentary?
No, I'm sorry.
He.
I don't get adult movies.
I think I have this right that she was on both payrolls.
Oh, really?
Yes. I think she had some special exemption where she was getting some special exemption at State Department, which is beyond
so
me.
She's the poster child if they ever take it to a special. Because this thing looks like it could go, like it could keep a special prosecutor in business for the eight years that she will be president.
Your opening statement there was exactly how I see it. That's exactly.
Right.
And then when she had her confirmation hearing, they were concerned about the foundation.
But they let her have it.
Well, it's Bill. Yeah, it's Clinton's.
Oh, because how dare you penalize a strong woman, right, because of what her husband may or may not be doing, right? I understand the argument, right?
Yeah, and he's so revered by the Democrats, and he's a lot better at this than she is.
He's good at it.
He's so good. He is so good. Yeah. I mean, you've read the stories about Clinton when he was first president. I think his first day of the union, the teleprompter stopped working or something. One of those speeches he gave, just gave it.
He winged it.
Yeah, and that's
no, he's
how good
a natural.
Yeah.
He's a natural, and she's not.
She's as bad as he is good. Did you see? You didn't go to Iowa. Sorry, Iowa.
No.
Hour and a half late. All these old people sitting there, and she's an hour and a half late.
Oh, my God. That was.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Was she wearing that $12,000 Armani jacket that while she was talking about the poor?
I would think $12,000 is my clothing wardrobe for my life.
Yeah.
That's
a lot of paint.
A lot of jeans and a lot of big and tall shirts for me for $12,000.
Well, think about that, too. And I hear this from Democrats. That one thing that they worry about with her, she historically exercises and repeatedly bad judgment. Why are you wearing a $13,000?
Because she felt like it.
Yeah, but bad judgment. You know, right. Special prosecutor wife, bad judgment. Emails, bad judgment. She had Benghazi, some bad judgment.
It's not bad judgment. I disagree. It's I'm Hillary Clinton. The laws don't apply to me. See, when you say rule of law, I mean rule of you, not me. I'm Hillary. I don't have. I'm above it.
I agree with that.
That's what
which side of Mount Rushmore is she going to be on?
The back.
No, how dare you? You got to wipe off Thomas Jefferson or Lincoln.
Is there enough room?
Oh, my God.
She's out there edging it out right now.
You know what I mean?
It'll be legacy the whole way.
Off with their heads. I see like Alice in Wonderland. I see the queen, the ice queen from Narnia, you know, the evil one that gives the little kid the lukumis. You didn't see Chronicles of Narnia, but if you did, she's in there. Hillary's in there. She touches you with her wand and turns you to ice. That's all I'm saying. Okay, for another edition of the Chicago Way, Pat Brady.
Thank you, sir. Always good to see you.
Thank you. Jeff Carlin.
Thanks, Jen.
All right, see you later.